Welcome back, everyone. I'd like to support you to keep opening and diving into being. Suzanne, might we be able to switch the gallery to the, thank you. Thanks. Thank you. So for this next talk, it's really more, I'll be walking you through the map of meditation. I have a little bit of a check-in before I do, just to see if there are any questions to help with clarification, although we're going to be revisiting everything that I just talked about in a somatic way as we walk through this path of meditation and this map. So before we do, just any questions that might be in the field for clarification that might help you? So far, so good. Okay. All right. Yeah, we might have to.
Go ahead. We have in the chat that a recap would be really helpful.
Okay. I don't know what a recap of which part.
Do you have any more you'd like to say about the recap, if you'd like to come forward?
The recap of the four philosophies or the recap of Asmita and what Asmita is really about?
Asmita.
Okay. So, yes, I wasn't very distinct in saying that's the talk on Asmita, and now we're opening into. So Asmita Maya is when we're shifting attention so that we're seeing through the kosha of separation as the I thought, the ego I that comes back. Asmita is referencing ego I, actually. That's what it's referencing in Sanskrit. So it's part of us, part of our makeup, part of our mind that naturally identifies as a separate sense of self. And so the Asmita Maya is when we move beyond, and we, you know, the kosha itself is the ego eye, and then we move beyond it. And so it's when we are deconstructing the sense of separation, which is the deconstructive phase. So anytime we see the I thought that's coming through, and it could be the I thought claiming anything for itself, or we're moving beyond, you know, any sense of separation with objects, with thoughts, right? But in particular, that I thought, and the I thought can come through in really subtle ways, like expectation, striving, seeking in meditation, right? All of those are subtle movements of the I thought. So as we go deeper and deeper and we start to feel ourselves as what's beyond separation, so that's the Asmita part. And when we move beyond Asmita, that's when we open up to being in awareness. And that was more of the realm of what we were going into in the map. So the map really helps us understand that movement from being a separate self all the way through the continuum of awareness, where we start as a separate witness, then we dissolve separation a little bit further into witnessing presence, then separation dissolves even further into our non-separate wholeness of being, and then that dissolves from a translucency or a softness or a viscosity to a greater transparency of awareness that is unconditioned. So we're moving from separation to unqualified non-separation. Does that help? I hope so. Let me know if not. Does that make sense here? Yeah.
She said thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, absolutely. Thank you for asking. Okay. So, Kajal, if we could bring up that definitions sheet one more time, I'd like to just reference how when we're opening into Kashmir Shaivism and Shiva in particular, we're not speaking necessarily about the Hindu god Shiva. Shiva is to awaken as your essential nature. And if we break down that word in Sanskrit, S-I, she, means to lie down, and va is essential nature. So what the philosophy of Kashmir Shaivism is opening us into is our awakening to our most essential nature, to what's indestructible, not separate from anything. And at this stage of the game, with unqualified non-dualism, thank you very much, Kato. At this stage of the game, when we shift into Kashmir Shaivism, the unqualified non-dualism and the non-separation, our essence, incorporates separation. Non-duality incorporates duality. So we don't have any problem with the ego I. We don't have any problem with the world of separation. We can live in it and celebrate it even more fully because we feel the underlying non-separate essence that's here living through and expressing itself through everything. So non-separation embraces separation at this point. That's why it's a world embracing view, right? Okay. We're also moving from what feels very personal to what's impersonal, aren't we? We have a sense of personal sense of self when we're open as our separate ego I or our personality, but as we open as being, it's very impersonal. And it's this essence that's interconnected with being that's giving rise in each of you and each of us, in the ground underneath us, in the trees, in the flowers. We can begin to feel this non-separate essence or suchness that's impersonal, yet it's expressing itself through these uniquely personal expressions, right? A personal expression of your cat or your dog, a personal expression of the Subaru, a personal expression of the tree, a personal expression of Mount Rainier, that's jaw-dropping wonder, right? Yet, as we start to open up into this underlying essence that hopefully you might be beginning to get a taste of, if not, it's okay. Some of you may just be orienting to this for the first time, but over time, as you practice this, you might begin to actually feel this. That's the whole point, is that I don't want you to just take my word for it. I want you to do the experiments and see what's true for you, right? And we start to feel this underlying essence that's deeply impersonal. And then we can celebrate the diversity of expression. Because we're meeting that, now we're really curious. Oh, what are you, what's your life about? This is another unique expression of this impersonal essence that we know we share. We can feel this. Even as we seem to be meeting face to face, we're meeting space to space from the heart, right? Spacious openness to spacious openness. So, okay, enough of that. Let's do the map, this path of meditation. And so I'm going to walk you through this path or this map, and I'm going to do it as experientially as I can. I know that your mind's going to be taking in some of it as well, but as much as possible, I want to encourage you to feel it. And then when Jennifer offers her meditation a little later on this morning, she'll be offering a meditation, like I said, that we usually do on retreat. And it will explore some of this in a very experiential way where your thinking mind will hopefully be, you know, not trying to track things as much. So as much as possible, stay with the resonance, right? I know your mind's going to be doing things with it, but what's happening in that resonant field of the heart, right? What's your felt sense? Okay, so at the bottom of this map, we have 1 through 4. This is not 1 through 4, you're not going to find in the Shiva Sutras or the Pratyabhijñāhrityam, these ancient Kashmir texts, right? 1 through 4 are the first steps of eye rest. But because eye rest, you know, we really see eye rest in the way that Richard created it. It was coming right out of this map of meditation. We've incorporated at the base of the map because this is where we start from. Number one, welcoming and experiencing the life force that's given rise not only to you, but to every atom, molecule, and cell in the body and in the entire cosmos, right? And from that life force, from that essence, so really we're starting from essential nature here. It's just a different way to experience it. From that is where the deepest heartfelt desire is arising out of. It's impersonal, and yet it strikes our heart and eventually our mind, and we have this personal expression. But it's impersonal, and it arises from this universal life force. Does that make sense? And then our mind is like, oh, right? And then we experience and affirm our intentions. Could be an intention for practice, but here it's an intention that supports us to live out the heartfelt desire, right? And then we've got that inner resource of ground, safety, security, peace, well-being, and being. This is where we start from. So on the left, we have welcoming foundational practices. If you turn the path of meditation, we also have then to the left of that, the Zen Oxfording photos. This is another pictorial expression of the path of awakening, because this is a path of awakening. We're awakening to our essential nature, right? That's what this is about. So this is another path of awakening from the Zen tradition that Richard dropped into the side of the map. It's not in the Kashmir Shaivism books. And then if you turn it to its side, you can see on the English version on page 73, it says embodied life, non-dual realization, and unqualified non-dual realization, right? But in the Sanskrit version, if you look on page 72, it says Sankhya Patanjali's, then Advaita non-dualism, which is Advaita Vedanta, and then unqualified non-dual realization, which is Kashmir Shaivism. What I want you to understand about this map is it comes to us out of Kashmir Shaivism. However, it incorporates the highest understanding of Sankhya Patanjali's, and it incorporates the highest understanding of Advaita Vedanta. So I'll point that out as we walk through, okay? All right, so here we start with welcoming the body. So this is also gonna coincide with the koshas. We start with anamaya, welcoming the body. Sankalpa was built in the bottom. We wove that in, and now we're welcoming the body. So we start in the map with the elements. And on retreat, we work with the elements in meditation. We've done some a little bit here. So we start with this element of earth. So I want you to feel this in your body now, right? This quality of density, earth, heaviness. And what may be associated with this element of earth is just starting to feel safe with yourself, right? You can trust yourself. You can come home to your body. And then as we stay with what feels solid at first, it starts to open up. We feel more of a sense of fluidity, of flow through the body. Maybe it's the flow of breath or the flow of blood running through your veins. And we're opening up to the element of water, right? The element of water, and you might begin to feel a potency within yourself. And as we welcome home the body, all the sensations of the body, we might actually start to feel a sense of pleasure or sensuality within the body, right? Delight to feel the body, not just its solidity, but this fluidity, the element of water. And as we stay with the element of water, water may begin to have a sense of friction to it, and it might open quite naturally to the element of fire. This quality of heat somewhere in the body, warmth. So welcome in this, that sense of warmth, fire, and heat. What we're doing here is quite naturally is we welcome in the body of sensation, the fluidity and flow of the breath. Now, as that's released and liberated, and we're opening to the fire, we might liberate emotions. Right? Feel our sense of potency in the world as we're moving out into the world. And as we stay with the element of fire and this heat or flame, you can feel the heat rising up from the flame, right? And as the heat is emanating, it opens into the element of air quite naturally. So you start to feel a sense of air, expansiveness, perhaps the body sensing and the sense of the body of great presence that starts to expand. You can feel out in all directions, back behind, out in front, left and right, above and below. And as you do, this element of air quite naturally opens into something even more subtle, the element of space. So we're feeling a spaciousness, even right here at the bottom of the map. And as we do, this pervasiveness begins to permeate through the walls. Our eyes may still see solid objects, but this sense of feeling from the heart, we open into this that pervades and permeates everything. We might begin to open to this quality of being able to hear ourselves, to have our own voice, to trust our voice. And then as we move up the map, 10 through 14, we welcome the senses. So oftentimes you'll hear us in our meditation starting with the senses, right? So we're opening up the sense of smelling, tasting, seeing, feeling, and hearing. So we work through the organs of the body that open into the senses, and we open them to their natural functioning. We feel ourselves as a receptivity to sound. Or we're being before the mind labels what's being seen, just the capacity for seeing. We're not so focused on the content, but the background context. The substratum, the field that's here in which tasting unfolds, just the capacity for tasting, the whole body feeling, the whole body opens into the field so that in a way we're seeing from the heart, we're feeling and hearing through the whole body because we're hearing through a felt sense of vibration, not just through labeling. And then as we open up a little bit further, we're beginning to welcome emotions. So on this particular expression of the map, we're opening up through the chakras. Starts with security, that sense of feeling secure. That goes along with the Muladhara chakra, which is the base first energy center in the body. As we move up, we open into a sense of potency. That's the Svadhisthana, that's the second energy center. We feel that sense of pleasure and potency. And we come up to the third energy center. This is Manipura, where we feel a sense of empowerment, will, as we move out into the world. It's still a personal sense of will and expression. As we move up a little bit further on the map, we're opening into the heart center, this heart-centered chakra, Anahata, feeling our loving compassion naturally bubbles forth. And this rises up into the fifth chakra in the throat, Vishuddha chakra. Here we have a sense of speech, our willingness to hear ourselves, speak our truth out into the world. And then we're opening into the Ajna chakra, the sixth chakra. This is where we have a sense of clarity, clear seeing, a willingness to see ourselves and to be seen in our authenticity. A sense of intuition, opening to our truth, and all the emotions that unfold with this. So that's how this is expressed in this expression of the mouth or the map. And we might begin to ask, you know, what's life asking of me? And then as we walk a little further up the map, we're welcoming cognitions. And on this map of meditation, remember, this is thousands of years old. It always blows my mind that these ancient yogis and seers were opening into this and codifying it and putting it down, teaching it from teacher to student, but then codifying it. This science. It's unbelievable, because when we hit 21, 22, and 23, this goes right in with the neuroscience talk that I had yesterday. So 21 is thoughts in English. It's manas in Sanskrit. And this is encompassing the attention network of our brain. So they were tracking how there's a part of our brain that is having, it's noting and storing information. It's the shifting of attention from one thing to another. It's processing, right? Our thoughts. And then we have 22, which is buddhi. And this is more of the executive functioning network of the brain. And this is where we have our intellect, where we can start to make decisions. We need to be allowed to have our focus of attention to stay there for longer periods of time to be able to know where and how we want to shift attention so that we can begin to make decisions to move through the world. And then 23 is the ahamkara, which is the ego eye, right? So asmita is related to ahamkara. Ahamkara is the eye maker itself. And then asmita is the ego eye that is expressed out of it. So this is already identifying this part of us that identifies itself as separate and that appropriates everything for itself. It feels that it needs to control and appropriate things. It gloms onto them. I'm hungry. Versus hunger is just present. Hunger is arising, right? But it would be kind of funny if we dropped saying the I thought and we said, going to dinner is wanting to happen over here. Is going to dinner wanting to happen over there? Your friends might look at you a little sideways. Think that you might have been smoking a little something before that phone call. But that is really the case. Hunger's arising. Desire is arising. It's the I thought that gloms on and says, I want to go to dinner. Right? It's just this thought that's happening. And so they were able to distinguish this within meditation. And then 24 to 25 is the highest understanding of Sankhya and Patanjali Yoga Sutras. And here we have 24 being the objective changing world. You can see seen over to the right on the English version. This is prakriti. This is prakriti. So everything that comes below it, all of 1 through 24, is everything that's made of nature. These are the tattvas in Ayurveda, right? We can think of these as individual elements or building blocks of reality. This can be kind of like the periodic table, right? Kind of. And these are each of our elements. So everything of nature, everything that's coming and going, what's born, grows, stabilizes, decays, passes away, is all made up of 1 through 24. And then 25 So 1 through 24, this is where we're welcoming. We're welcoming all the changing objects, right? We're welcoming everything that's coming and going in our meditation. 25, welcoming the unchanging witness. So this is the subjective unchanging witness, that first big move in meditation that's so profound when we experience ourselves as unchanging. But remember, this is a dualistic philosophy, so it feels like the witness is separate from. And a lot of you described that when I first asked you to feel yourself as a witness. You felt separate from what you were looking at, right? It's natural. It's the seer, the observer. For a moment, we're going to skip 26 through 30, because remember that this map comes to us straight out of Kashmir Shaivism. And 26 through 30 are the Kanchukas. So if you look at the Sanskrit map, it's going to say, well, it doesn't say Kanchukas, but that's what it is. 26 through 30 are the Kanchukas. But we're going to skip them, because 31 is the highest understanding of Advaita Vedanta that's symbolized in this particular map. So 31 says self-remembering versus self-forgetting. Because when we're moving up the map, this is symbolic of when we're, 31 is symbolic of when we're shifting from being a witness to being a witnessing presence. So now we're not feeling separate from, we're realizing that yes, we're distinct from, but everything that's coming and going, we're not separate from. We can feel into it. It's arising in us. But remember, Advaita Vedanta said it was unreal. It was an unreal projection. So to the right, it says form emerging with an arrow moving down and formless emerging with an arrow moving up. So everything below the map, if we were moving down the map, if our formless essence was coming into form, this would be coming into form below the map, right? And we might forget our essential nature as we're coming down the map. We might. But it wouldn't mean that our essential nature isn't here. It's always here, right? But from this understanding of a witnessing presence, it's kind of like saying world denying, like, ah, don't pay attention to all that, right? It's an unreal projection of the mind. But actually in Kashmir Shaivism, we know it's not. So we would be embracing all of this and feeling it as just a unique expression. So this is the distinction of starting to remember our wholeness, this witnessing presence that we realize ultimately is not separate from anything, versus feeling and knowing the eyes will still see separation. But let's come back to 26 through 30, because these are the Kanchukas, the messengers of being, right? The messengers of wholeness, or the pointer sisters, because when we're coming down, when you're moving down the map, that's when formlessness is coming into form. It's still expressing itself, but it's just coming into form. And it would be hard to experience itself if it was formless. There's no contrast. It would just be this great amorphous, vast transparency, right? So when it comes into form, it can start to experience itself, and it kind of hides from itself, if you will. It says, oh, I'm going to forget for a while. And then we have this amazing wonder and utter delight and awe when we remember. Right? So 26 is when we're looking at that sense of spaciousness. So when we're feeling that separate sense of self, we're feeling more contracted and limited in the body. But when we're opening us up as being, we start to feel much more expansive and open and spacious. That's niyati in Sanskrit. Then we have kala, and that's time. And this is when we're looking, so before, when we come into our spaciousness of being, if we go back to 26, at some point you might even realize that your essence is everywhere and nowhere specific. When we did the being meditation at a homeless shelter, and we entered it a little bit differently, we just simply did, okay, imagine yourself on a summer's day, and you got nothing you need to do. All your chores have been done, and you've got your like your favorite drink next to you. You're sitting back. You're maybe looking out at your trees or something, or you're just hanging out. There's no place you need to be. You're just being. And we asked the five questions that I asked you. And at the end, this was at a homeless shelter. And at the end, we interviewed them. And when we interviewed and said, where were you when you're just being? A woman at the homeless shelter said, nowhere and everywhere, or everywhere and nowhere specific. Seriously? Everywhere and nowhere specific. It's the directionlessness, right? She totally tapped right in. We all know this. It's already here. It's just that our senses draw us out into the world, and the world is so interesting, or it's so beautiful, or it's so heartbreaking that we can't help it. That's part of being human. We engage with the senses and what's happening in life. And what we're doing here is we're rolling that back so that we can start to see that there's something here that's always been here, that's untouched by all that's coming and going. A stillness that's here. And so we get this beyond limitation, this directionlessness of being. So then we hop over into time, kala, time. And when we're feeling our separate sense of self, I talked about this a little bit this morning, so I'll go a little bit more quickly. We feel time bound, don't we? We're running late for something. We need more time to study for something. We need more time to do a project, to get our kids ready for school, whatever. Versus when we're opening up as our essence of being and our presence, we're feeling beyond time. There's something here that's timeless, right? Hopefully you've tapped into that. We're moving beyond a sense of past, present, and future. Remember, we're dissolving that sense of separate self that needs a past, present, and future to exist. Then we come into 28. This is raga, and this is representative of desire. We're not going to get rid of the desires that come up in the body and mind. The body's always going to desire food for the most part. It's always going to desire a little bit of financial security to be able to feel secure and safe in the world. Our personalities are going to have unique desires to go to Fiji or, you know, to dance or to become an artist, whatever it is that you desire. So it's not about that, but with that desire, oftentimes we feel a sense of lack. We're lacking in something. We need something to feel better. I need that piece of chocolate cake to feel better right now, right? I really need it. Do I need it? No, but I really want it. That's the desire. Give me the chocolate. Give me all the chocolate. I'll take it. Right? But when we're in being, and I want you to really feel into this, when you're dropping down and you're just being in your presence, aren't you beyond lack or need or want? Isn't there something about you that is beyond lack? It doesn't lack for anything. It doesn't need anything. It's perfect just as it is. And then as we open into 29, we're opening into vidya, and that's knowledge. So oftentimes, you know, you're hearing all this. Some of you are going to be like, oh my gosh, I really want to read about Kashmir Shaivism. What are these books? There's four books. I've only heard about two of them. What are the other two? I don't know about Advaita Vedanta. Right? So we can't help it. Our minds are amazing how they want to learn. And we grow because of that. But in our most essential nature, as we're dropping into being, we're beyond the need of knowledge, right? We're beyond the analytical mind. And we're feeling something about us that's complete just as it is. What we're opening to also is so familiar and so subtle that it's easy to dismiss. So easy to dismiss. But it's complete. How could it not be when it's giving rise to everything? It's like we're the fish and our essential nature is like the separate self is a fish. Our essential nature is the water. It's the air we breathe. It's everywhere. It's suffusing us. It's in every atom and cell. And we're looking for the air. We're looking for the ocean. And then 30 is that sense of doership. This is kala, doership. So oftentimes we feel ourselves as a limited sense of needing to do something to feel whole versus when we're opening as being, we're already whole. We're wholeness itself. So can you see as we're moving up into the formless, into our spaciousness that's not separate, we're opening up into our formless essence, right? That's why we call it the pointer sisters, because it can either point us to these parts of us that are, you know, beyond, we're spacious, we're whole, we're complete, we're perfect, timeless, beyond time. Or it points us to the ways that we feel more limited and contracted, which is what happens when we are in a body and we're in form. It's okay, right? Because once we tap into being and then beyond that into awareness, it embraces the form. It embraces all of these expressions. Okay, so here we go. Now we're going into the upper parts of this path of meditation or this map. And here we're completely moving into the formless. So I'm going to put words to things that really are wordless, honestly, and it affirms itself. But I would love to give you some orientation to let you open into this. So as we open into 32, 33, and 34, this is in Sanskrit, 32 is Shuddhavijja, 33 is Ishvara, and 34 is Sadashiva. And as we're opening into 32, this is where the world and the self are distinct, right? And this is where there's just this blush. Now remember, everything's still formless. So it's just the tiniest expression of the world and a sense of self becoming distinct. It's our essential nature that's moving into action. It's symbolized as kriya, this pure action that's going to come out into the world as form, right? So here we can think of this as people awaken sometimes to their essential nature, to their non-separate essence, they can start to feel something here that's not separate in their very presence. And then they feel that presence coming back, looking back at them from the world. There's no separation anywhere. And it's melting away that separate sense of I-ness, right? I am this, right? And then as we move into 33, into Ishvara, here is more of the world that's just starting to appear as distinct. Or as we're moving up the map, the world is appearing and dissolving of form. So this is when the universe is just sprouting. And we have here this word, jnana, which is pure knowing in Sanskrit. It's just pure knowing. So you ever have that time when you're teaching or you're talking to someone and all of a sudden something's coming out of your mouth and you've never imagined yourself saying it before, right? You couldn't even imagine this coming out. You're like, where's this even coming from? You just have that moment of creativity. That's kind of how I relate to this, even though that's kind of in form. This is the formless essence of it, but it's the potentiality of that pure knowing breaking through, right? That direct download, pure knowing. And here, this is essential nature as the knowing itself. I'm going to offer this up to you and see if this makes sense. It doesn't have to make sense to the mind. Remember with this part especially, I want you to see how it resonates. There's a knowingness. We'll call it with a capital K, a knowingness that's equal to awareness, let's say, the purity of just pure knowingness that's behind anything that's going to be known. It's that background substratum, that essence, right? That's here, pure knowing without any content. A transparency, if you will, that is underneath any of the color or the form of what's going to express itself. An essence. And even essence is too much. So then we're moving up into 34, and this is Sadashiva, and this is the self appearing as distinct. This is described as the first ray of divine compassion, because up until now, there is nothing, no even movement of coming towards form, right? And this philosophy and understanding, this is all Kashmir Shaivism, by the way. So here we have Icha, unicity as willfulness. Right? Just the unicity as a willfulness, a pure willfulness to even the capacity before it even comes into existence. Right? I think of this as like some essence that's here underneath before you see a dandelion sprouting through a crack in the middle of a highway. What is that that's even going to decide to come up there? You know? What is that? So here, this is the self dissolving a little bit more, and we're moving up now, and this is just the slightest, most subtle differentiation between the absolute and the idea of the universe to even exist, right? This is very subtle. And then as we move up, we have 35 and 36. 35 is Shakti, the dynamism of essential nature, the creative spanda, the fact that it can even just have a come from unmanifest into manifest form. It's this spanda is this divine throb or this pulse of the unmanifest that's even going to begin to come. It's before it's manifest. So it's a quasi-movement. It's not even a movement, if you will, but it's just this, the beginning pulse that eventually will unfold into prana or chi, which is the life force that comes out through the universe. And so this is the potency, that dynamism that's here. And Shakti, or that's Shakti, Shiva and Shakti are not separate. So Shiva is the unmanifest. It's the potential. It's the stillness. We're beyond quality here. It's utterly formless. It's the static, unchanging essence that's here. This is, we're moving into, it says, stabilizing self-recognition, right? It's just still stabilizing. It might blink in and blink out. And then here, as we move up to the map on 37, now we're moving into Sahaj Samadhi. So this is where there's a greater stabilization into pure awareness. Absolute consciousness with a capital C, that substratum to all. There's some semblance of awareness being aware of itself, but it's not the ego eye. It's not that. It affirms itself. And here is where all sense of conditioning drops away. No joy. This is the source of love itself. We could say loving awareness because there's nothing it's not separate from. It's utter communion with everything. But this is even before love. Leonard Cohen has this great song. I'll see if I can find it and read it later. But here, there is where the Buddha described this as the unborn, the unconditioned, and the unbecome. So it's giving rise to everything. And then 38 is when we're actually off the map. This is where awareness may just blink back out of existence, and we're back in its source, This is before the Big Bang, beyond the beyond. And there's no awareness to be aware of awareness here. Pure awareness even dissolves into its source. So then we move back down the map, right? Now we come all the way down and back through, and there's this sense of walking back through. And this is the integration. This is Sahaj, which is the final step of iRest, chapter 10 in your manual. Sahaj, this is the integration. We're living our deepest expression, whatever we've opened into as that felt sense knowing, this awakening or enlightenment that's happened. And now that's here. And we feel it. Once our eyes open, they never close. Even though there might be a forgetting, that's concealment. There's this whole Pratyabhijna Hridyam, which describes something that's born, that grows, that dies, and then there's revelation to our essential nature, and then the concealment, where we forget. But that doesn't take away from essential nature being here through it all. It's still here. It's here right now, even if none of this makes sense. It's here. It's giving, it's here expressing itself through you. It's the looking behind the eyes. What is this looking, this seeing that's been here, that's unchanged since the moment you took your first breath, that's been here throughout every moment of your life and will be here the moment you take your last breath? The body, the mind goes through changes, the personality, but this essence is unchanging. And so we walk back down the map and we integrate this and we move back out into the world, hopefully feeling some semblance of our essential nature. Even as we embrace the sense of separation and seeing different personalities and seeing everything, our eyes, our physical eyes see separation, but the eyes of the heart know no separation because it's felt. So that is the walk through the map. So thank you very much. We'll have time later for questions, and I think I'll let you go into your break. But as you do, keep feeling this essence that's here as you take your break, and we'll come back in 15 minutes. Thank you so much.